all you folks of the masculine persuasion are supposed to pick you up one of these little blue pens in the basket in the back, and if you didn't get one before you leave, just a small token of love and appreciation from brother and sister preacher, whoever they are. But we just want you to know how much we appreciate you, and so just a small expression of love. So be sure and pick you up one, and that's got a good fat grip for our fat fingers, okay? A lot nicer than those little pink pens that the ladies got with a little cushy ball on the end. These are substance, so get you one of those and stick it in your pocket, and that way you don't have to borrow a pen from Melvis when the time comes. We just had Vacation Bible School last week. Did anybody know about that? Oh, yeah. Man, it was something. We had a great time. We had a wonderful a bunch of folks that worked so hard to put that together. And the kids had such a good time. And we got a thank you card from a parent. And I want to read it to you this morning. It says, "Dear Tanner, brothers and sisters, we appreciate you making us feel so welcome at your VBS program. The kids really had a wonderful week. And I want you to use this small money." She gave us a check, believe it or not. "I want you to use this small amount of money to fund next to help fund next year's Vacation Bible School and all the fun. In Christian love, Jennifer Beaton and her children." I can't read the names. I really can't. But anyway, they are members at Grant Street, and they really had such a good time, so she gave us this thank you note. So I thought that would be kind of neat. Lamar told me I'm supposed to give this back to him, so hopefully I will remember to do that. Oh, I am still a little tired. Have not yet heard from the doctor as far as the pathology. I appreciate Melvis's prayer. The doctor felt like everything was going to be okay, and I do too. But do keep me in your prayers. I think everything's going to be fine, though, but we'll hear back from the pathology on the tumors that were taken. And we'll go from there. The text this morning, Ephesians chapter 4, talks about dads. It talks about children. It talks about mom and dad. And family is a very important part of the Christian life. If it weren't for family, none of us would be here anyway. I told you this story a few years ago, and I think it bears repeating. Sometimes people get a little confused. Cole, a.k.a. Seymour, kind of got the verses mixed up, or maybe I mixed them up when I told him. It's possible, isn't it, Cole? But anyway, people get things mixed up sometimes and they don't listen too well. So listen carefully. The children begged for a hamster. And after the usual promises of, "We'll take care of it," they got one. And they named him Danny. Isn't that a great name for a hamster? Danny. You're a little tall, but that's okay. Danny. So 2 months went by, and as was expected, Mom found herself responsible for all of the care and all of the feeding of little Danny. And she got fed up with it, so she found Danny a new home. And so she told the children about it, and you know, they took the news quite well, all things considered. He's going to be going to a new place, and they kind of took the news well. Although one of them said, "You know, he's been around here a long time. We're going to miss him." And yes, Mom said, "But he's too much work for one person, and since I'm that one person, I say he goes." Another child said, "Well, maybe if he wouldn't eat so much and wouldn't be so messy, we could keep him." But Mom said, "No, it's time to take Danny to his new home. Now go and get his cage." And with one voice, the children cried out with tears, "Danny, we thought you said Daddy." Oh, yeah. Confusion. Mark Twain once remarked, he said, "When I was a boy of 14, my father was so ignorant I could hardly stand to have the old man around. But when I got to be 21, I was astonished at how much the old man had learned in 7 years." Yeah, right. Right. Yeah, it's amazing how our perception of our fathers changes as we get older. And when we were younger and thought they were absolutely insane, the older we get, the more we realize how much we nearly drove them insane. But there was a lot more sanity to Pop than folks may have realized. There are some cute sayings that have been attributed to dads, and I think most of you have said at least one or more of these through the years with your own children, or you heard your dad say them. Check this out. This is going to hurt me more than it hurts you. Yeah, Don't forget to check the oil. Oh yeah, that one is a biggie. Bring back the change. Never going to happen. How should I know? Ask your mother. Hey, I'm not made out of money. Or this one. If you break your leg, don't come running to me. I don't think that's going to happen. You just wait till you have kids of your own. Yeah. Yeah. It worked. I was not asleep. I was just resting my eyes. My daddy said that so many times. Be quiet. Can't you see I'm trying to think? And finally, why? Because I said so. Oh, I always hated that one. Someone once said, parents spend the first part of a child's life urging him to talk and walk, and then the rest of his childhood trying to get him to sit down and be quiet. Well, there you go. You asked for it. Brethren, we are here today to remember the Lord and to honor our earthly fathers. And it is appropriate for us to do both. This morning, I'd like for us for the next few minutes to think about three things for which we should say, thank you, Dad. Number one, thanks for taking care of us. Number two, thanks for teaching us what we needed to know. And number three, thanks for godly examples and illustrations about how to live. So let's just dive right in. Thank you for taking care of us. We need to thank our fathers for taking care of us. 1 Timothy 5 and 8 is a negative statement, but it has a positive message. If anyone does not provide for his own, especially those of his own family, those of his own household, he has denied the faith and is worse than an infidel, worse than an unbeliever. Now that's a powerful statement. If a father does not provide material goods, material needs for his family, food, clothing, shelter, and such, then he has denied the faith of Christ and is worse than an unbeliever. Why would that make a father worse than an unbeliever? Because unbelievers provide for their families. They take care of them. They meet their physical needs. That's what it's talking about. In Ephesians 6:4, it says, bring them up in the nurture and admonition of the Lord. Bring them up. The emphasis is on the bringing them up. Bring them up. Did my daddy provide for me? Well, of course he did. Of course he did. Some people say we were poor, but we didn't know it. Ladies and gentlemen, we were poor and we knew it. Okay? We knew it. And yet, I honestly don't remember missing out on any needs. I really don't remember missing out on anything that I needed. We never went hungry. There was always food, clothing, shelter. What about your daddy? Did he provide for you? You really need to thank him for it if he's still alive. And if he's gone on, you certainly need to give thanks to God that he did. Thank God for dads that provide for their children. R.C. Mayer, M-E-Y-E-R, R.C. Mayer came to Oklahoma from Kentucky with his new bride, and he settled down in Indian Territory, which later became the state of Oklahoma. This young couple ultimately had 16 children. Can you imagine? Some of you maybe can. 16 children. Now, he was a law officer in Oklahoma Territory, back before they were state, obviously, but he also became a sharecropper because being a peace officer didn't pay enough, and so he couldn't feed his family on that alone. So not only was he an officer of the law, but he was also a sharecropper in order to be able to feed his family. His grandson Boyce Moton is his name. He's a preacher in Missouri. He writes this about his grandfather. He said, "It never occurred to my grandfather that the government should take care of his family. That was his responsibility. Their poverty did not discourage him from the personal pride of caring for his own. He raised his children without the benefit of electricity or running water. He died without ever having a driver's license. His children nevertheless grew up to be hardworking, patriotic, and devoted Christians. I am confident that in spite of his poverty, he did a better job of providing for his own than the government would have or could have done." I find that interesting. We need to thank God for the fathers who provided as best they can for their families. We thank all of you fathers for what you've done. Number two, thank you for teaching us what we needed to know. Oh, there's so much in life that has to be taught. What are you born knowing? You know how to cry. That's what you're born knowing. You know how to force your parents to change your diaper. Okay? That's pretty much all you know. And you have to learn everything then. Everything has to be learned. How to walk, how to talk, how to eat with your hands and then ultimately with a fork. How to drink without pouring it all over yourself. One of the funniest things I ever saw when Chrissy was a tiny little, when she was not even 2 years old, and she grabbed hold of a cup and turned it up. Didn't have a lid on it. Grape juice went everywhere. Oh yeah, I laughed and Faye was horrified. But it was in her Sunday dress. But it's hilarious. You have to learn everything. And fathers teach their children so very much. Ephesians 6:4, "And you fathers, do not provoke your children to wrath, but bring them up in the training and admonition of the Lord." That's New King James. I'm going to read from some more modern translations. Some of these we don't even like necessarily, but it really does give a nice picture of this verse. The New International Version, "Fathers, do not exasperate your children. Instead, bring them up in the training and instruction of the Lord." Contemporary English Version, "Parents, don't be hard on your children. Raise them properly. Teach them and instruct them about the Lord." The Living Bible says, "Don't keep on scolding and nagging your children, making them angry and resentful. Rather, bring them up with the loving discipline the Lord Himself approves." It gives that's a nice filling out of that passage, what that's saying. Fathers instruct their children on many things. Now, I remember my dad taught me how to do a lot of things. He taught me how to make a garden. He taught me how to work on cars. He taught me how to straighten nails. And that's an art. That's a dying art. How many of you know how to straighten nails? Honestly? Honestly? Three of you. The rest of you know to go to the hardware and just buy some new ones, right? But you know, there are all kinds of things that fathers teach us. My dad, he taught me how to respect other people, treat everybody with respect. He taught me how to cope with disappointment and how to deal with the troubles that come along. Too many things to mention here. I remember Dad used to say to me, "Robert, pay attention to what you're doing." That way I wouldn't hit my thumb so hard when I was straightening nails. Okay? For some reason, he always seemed to say that to me. I can't seem to figure out why. Another one he said was, "Use your head, boy. Use your head. Or think." When my kids were growing up, I'd tell them, "Don't be afraid to ask questions. If you don't ask questions, you're not going to learn anything." And like many parents, I've said this: if everyone was jumping off a bridge, would you want to jump off of one too? So many things, so many wise things that we can help our children with. Fathers have given all kinds of instruction to their children. Instruction and wisdom on dealing with life, with school, work, relationships, dating, driving a car, on and on and on the list could go. Faithful instruction is important, but we also have to be careful how we deliver it. Effective fathers are less like critics and more like coaches, who will encourage good behavior and praise success, and then they will help you learn how to do things better. But it comes across more like coaching and less like criticism. Oh, there have been a lot of fathers out there that, boy, you can't do anything right, can you? And that's just no good, folks. That's hypercritical. That's not going to get it done. We need to be people that we don't keep on scolding and nagging our children, making them angry and resentful, as we read earlier in Ephesians 6:4. I want to read you a sad confession from one father. This is in prose, but just listen carefully to this. I took my children to school, but not to church. I taught them to drink, but not of the living water. I enrolled them in Little League, but not Sunday school. I showed them how to fish, but not to be fishers of men. I made the Lord's Day a holiday rather than a holy day. I gave them a color TV, but provided no Bible. I handed them the keys to the car, but did not give to them the keys of the kingdom of God. I taught them how to make a living, but failed to bring them to Christ who can make a life. Brothers and sisters, you need to thank your Father for faithful instruction that He gave you in life and for all the good advice, but especially thank your Father if He gave you instruction from the Lord. And I know many of you fathers today here are teaching your children. I can see it. You can see it in your children, but you get caught doing it too. We catch you. We see you teaching your children. There are teaching moments that happen all the time. You're teaching them about faith. You're teaching them about how to obey God. You're teaching them more than how to live in this world. You're teaching them how to get ready to live in the next world. Thank you so much for taking care of us. And thank you so much for teaching us what we need to know. And finally this morning, thank you, fathers, for showing us what a godly man is like. You know, if it weren't for examples, we would be in a world of hurt. Tony Campolo is a big-name denominational preacher, but he grew up in the projects of Philadelphia. And he overcame, he got a good education, and he's now a world-renowned preacher and philosopher, writer, but he told this story about the projects in Philadelphia. He said, there are generations of people, three generations, living in those projects who have never once seen a person in their family get up in the morning and go to work at a job. Three generations of people that all they've done is draw a government check. Three generations of people that are living in poverty and they don't know any other way to live. This is all they've ever seen. They don't have godly examples. They just have an example of getting up in the morning when you want to, do what you want to do, your check will be in the mail. And they've never seen a person go to work. Three generations. And we wonder why things happen like they do. We wonder. Folks, if it were not for our fathers and others in our lives living godly examples before us, showing us this is how a man behaves. This is how a man treats a lady. This is how a man treats his children. If it were not for those godly examples like that, we would be lost, 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 like so many around us. 1 Corinthians chapter 11, verse 1, Paul said to the church at Corinth, who were his children in the faith, he said, follow my example as I follow the example of Christ. Please notice Paul didn't say, do everything I do. He said, do everything I do which is Christ-like. He said, be ye followers of me as I follow Christ. Do everything I do that is Christ-like. Follow the example of Christ. Paul wasn't perfect, and neither are we. We make mistakes. And to our children, we should not only say, but live before them in such a way that we have a heart that is willing to apologize when we make a mistake. Too many men have this attitude, love is never having to say you're sorry. Folks, those are just nice little words from a really sappy love movie. Okay? That's all that is, a sappy movie. Love means never having to say you're sorry. Oh, there is not a strong enough word I can say. Hogwash. That's pretty strong. That is just so not true. Love means I will say I'm sorry when I mess up. Love means I will apologize when I have been overly harsh with my family, my wife, my children. Love means that I will do what's right, even when it's inconvenient. That's what love means, and that's what being a man is all about. Paul did not live a perfect life. That's why he said, be followers of me as I follow Christ. I have not lived a perfect life. There are some things that I've done in my life I don't want my children to do. I don't want them to follow the steps that I took. I have set some bad examples in my life, but I've also done some good things. And I've given them some good examples, some Christ-like examples that I hope they will copy and use in their own life. But the most important things are loving God and loving people. And if we are godly men, we will set that kind of example for our children. One man said, I'm going to give you a couple of stories and then we're going to wrap this up. One man told this story. He says, when I was a teenager, Dad would come to my room and say, come on, kid, let's go. Where are we going? We're going to Lucy's. Once a month, Dad would visit Lucy Butchko, an elderly woman whose body was twisted and pinned into a wheelchair by arthritis. He would reach his big arms around her frail body, lift her out of the wheelchair, place her in the front seat of our brown station wagon, and then he would fold the wheelchair, put it in the back, and drive Lucy to the monthly fellowship meeting for shut-ins. Dad was vice president of a national publishing company, but he was shuttling shut-ins. Years later, while he was in the hospital trying to recover from a massive heart attack, Dad learned about a family that lived down our street that didn't have enough money to buy groceries. So he wrote them a check. It was the last thing he ever wrote. He died later that evening. Brethren, all I can say is, what a father. What an example. What an illustration of Christ he was to his son. And his son never forgot. Another man talking about his father, he said, once when I was a teenager, my father and I were standing in line to buy tickets for the circus. We always enjoyed it whenever it came to town. We weren't rich, but we didn't consider ourselves poor. Finally, there was only one family between us and the ticket counter, and that family made a big impression on me. There were 8 children, all probably under the age of 12. You could tell they didn't have a lot of money. Their clothes were not very expensive, but they were neat. The children were well-behaved and orderly, standing in line, and they were excitedly jabbering about the clowns and the elephants and the other acts they were looking forward to seeing that night. You get the sense they had never been to the circus before. It was going to be a highlight for their young lives. The mother and father were standing at the front of the pack, and they were as proud as they could be. Mother was holding her husband's hand, looking up at him as if to say, you're my knight in shining armor. The ticket lady asked the father how many tickets he wanted. He proudly said, please let me buy 8 children's tickets and 2 adult tickets so I can take my family to the circus. The ticket lady quoted the price. The man's wife let go of his hand. Her face dropped. The man's face went white. He leaned a little closer and said, how much did you say? The ticket lady again quoted the price for admission to the circus. The man didn't have enough money. How was he supposed to turn and tell his 8 children that he didn't have enough money to take them to the circus? Seeing what was going on, my dad put his hand in his pocket, took out the $20 bill that was intended for us and dropped it on the ground. Then he reached down, picked up the bill, tapped the man on the shoulder and said, "Excuse me, sir, I believe this fell out of your pocket." The man knew what was going on. He wasn't begging for a handout, but certainly appreciated the help in a desperate, heartbreaking, and embarrassing situation. And he looked straight into my daddy's eye, took my dad's hand in both of his, and with quivering lips and a tear streaming down his cheek, replied, "Thank you. Thank you. This really means so much to me and my family." Brethren, the man telling the story said about his father, he said, "My father and I went back to our car and drove home. We didn't go to the circus that night. And it was okay." Now, that's a great example, isn't it? That's a man that has the heart of Christ, looking out for others, trying to be a good example to his son. And I'm telling you, that son never forgot that. He never forgot that story. God is such a good father to us. He takes care of us. He did something for us that we could not possibly have done for ourselves. He gave His only begotten Son to die on Calvary's cross. And through Him, He has chosen us to be His children. He has chosen to be there for us at all times. And He wants us to be with Him forever in heaven. Let God be a father to you today by choosing to be His son, His daughter. Come to your Father before time runs out. Brethren, it is a beautiful thing when men behave like God wants them to. And God wants all of us, whether we are fathers or not, to be godly men, to live a godly life before all, to set an example before everyone younger than us who's looking up and watching us. And even you young men, even you teenage young men, there are people that are looking up to you, that are watching you, that are looking to learn things from you, and they're going to copy you. They're going to imitate you. So you be a godly young man and show people the example of what a Christian man is supposed to be. Fathers, thank you. Thank you for taking care of us. Thank you for giving us what we needed, instructing us in the things we needed to know. Thank you for giving us godly examples to follow and showing us how to live a godly life. Thank you for that. And we thank God for you, and we thank God that He has given us this morning to be together, to honor Him and to thank you for what you've done. But we've got to make up our minds. We're going to serve Him today and every day that we live. As you examine your life and your heart this morning, if there's anything standing between you and God, don't let it stay there. Just like a loving father will forgive his children, God stands ready to forgive us if we will come to Him. Whatever your need today, if there's a way we can help you to obey your Father, then come now as we stand and sing.